This is the Porter Pickups Tonecast, Episode 7. Today we'll be talking with Hank Donovan from Rattlesnake Cables. We'll talk more about his cables, tone, and the gear industry. All right, I'm Brian here with Derek for the Tonecast. Hey, Derek.
What up? I'm here. It's happening, the Tonecast. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And don't forget, you can always go over to our website, porterpickups.com, and click on the community tab. And there you can suggest some topics to us for the show. You know, pretty soon here, Brian and I are just going to run out of things to say, so we need some topics. You can ask questions, and you can also go back to our previous podcast there and listen, catch up. If you have any feedback from our last show about amps, we'd love to hear about it. So head over to the website, submit a comment, head over to our forum on Facebook, Porter Pickups Tone Community, and you can leave some feedback there about our last show on amps.
Very cool. So this week, Derek, we had a chance to sit down with Hank from Rattlesnake Cables. And so we have pre-recorded the interview. Yeah, a lot of good information about cables, a lot of good stuff about kind of the gear industry getting started.
I like doing this after we have the interview because we know how cool it is.
We can see into the future and we know what's coming up.
Your life is about to get really good for about 15 minutes.
It is a lot easier to talk about what we know is coming up than what we hope that he'll say, even though we have an outline and we can follow that. So let's go ahead and jump right to that interview. All right, so Hank, we're glad to have you here. Hank is the owner of Rattlesnake Cables, and I'm just happy to have you on the Tonecast. So why don't you start, Hank, say hello first, and then we'll ask you some questions.
Awesome. I guess hello.
Perfect. All right. So far, we're following the script pretty well. So he said hello. We asked him to say hello. So we're doing good. We've got we're starting off number 7 on a great. I think we're thinking of Christmas. We're ready to like take a break probably. But anyways, Hank, we're glad to have you. I guess first question I had for you was just tell me about Rattlesnake Cables and kind of how you got started making guitar cables.
It's probably been 2013, probably when I first started thinking about doing cables. But before that, I've been kind of a longtime guitar nerd, working on my own guitars and really got into like pedals, trying to make them, kind of tinker with them, fix them, because I had a whole shelf full of broken pedals and friends who have broken pedals and I definitely had an interest in soldering. So it was like kind of just digging into those things and just kind of learning electronics and getting into kits. And that's what kind of started the whole, like, it would be cool to kind of build something. And at that same time, I was kind of exploring cables. I had some friends with some, you know, kind of boutique cables. And I was really like curious of like why, what makes them great, what makes them good. And looking at my own cables that I had, I wanted to see like, huh, it might be cool to learn about what's all involved in getting a good tone sounding cable. And that's when I started just kind of researching and sourcing parts and kind of working on various prototypes until finally, you know, I had something that I knew what I wanted as far as specs. And when I started working on prototypes, immediately, all my musician friends in bands and whatnot were just kind of just all over me on wanting a cable for themselves. And that's when it kind of clicked like, huh, maybe I could, kind of pursue this and see where it goes and kind of just treat it as a hobby. And that was, you know, late 2012, early 2013. In 2015, officially, that's where we formed the business and try to really, you know, make it a thing.
Nice.
Nice.
Yeah. It's kind of, sounds similar to kind of how I got started. I was making pickups for the guitars that I was messing around with. And except for, you know, it sounds like maybe you had more people interested in the cables to start out with. I was kind of trying to convince friends to buy pickups and please do it. Please buy my pickups. Cables are kind of an interesting thing for sure. So tell me about the name. You guys are in Montana. Is there obviously a connection with the name Rattlesnake in Montana? Is that kind of the theme behind it?
Yeah. So, you know, when I was thinking about a name for the business, I definitely wanted to have a tip of the hat to like where I'm from. And, I'm in Missoula, and then there's the Rattlesnake area and the Rattlesnake Creek that flows into the Clark Fork of the Missoula area. And there's Rattlesnake Wilderness as well. And I wanted to have a name also that was kind of non-genre specific too. So I felt like Rattlesnake could appeal to country guys, to rock guys, and that really works out well in that kind of angle. But definitely I didn't want to have something that was just like, you know, Missoula Cables or something like that. Kind of wanted something, if you're from the area, you definitely know that it's a tip of the hat. But, you know, but it doesn't mean, you know, we have tons of rattlesnakes around here and stuff like that.
you don't have like a mascot in the shop or anything, do you? Rattlesnake? No. Okay. I think that's interesting what you said about how you're kind of trying to make it sure that it wasn't like genre specific, because I could see that if you called it, you know, something that sounded more metal or something like that, you know, maybe people would think, oh, this isn't good for that. That's cool.
Yeah. Death Cables or something like that. You know, and it's like kind of locks you in.
That's true. Then no jazz guys would use your cables at all, which wouldn't be good. So, tell me about, we kind of asked this to a lot of our interviews, and I think it's a really interesting thing for us to know, because, you know, we're both guitar nerds and inspired to play guitar, but we're always curious how each of our interview people get into guitar. So maybe tell us just quickly how you got into guitar.
Well, I mean, compared to like seems like all my other friends that are in guitar have, like, you know, got lessons and picked up guitar at age 12 or something like that. I was kind of a late bloomer. I didn't get my first guitar until I was 18. So, you know, graduated high school, got my first guitar. But what kind of, at that time, you know, when, you know, your later years in high school is like, it's a great time to just be super obsessed with music. And I definitely was in kind of the punk and post-punk goth stuff. So it's like a lot of Joy Division and Cure and all bands like that I was really super into. So when I got guitar, you know, it's one of the first things I wanted to learn how to play were the songs that I was listening to. And, you know, there's no guitar teachers or even friends of mine that knew how to play like a Cure song or a Joy Division song. And, you know, it was like that first early just trying to figure it out by ear. And that just eventually that switch from being totally obsessed with that kind of music in those high school years just switched right to being obsessed with guitar. And then from that point, you know, over the years, you know, the genres have changed, the styles have changed, but that's what definitely got the hook.
Nice.
Got the hook in.
So what was that first guitar that you had?
Oh my God. It was a pointy guitar. That's what I always like to refer to it as. It was like a Yamaha RGZ, had the Floyd
nice
trem bar on. I mean, it was black. I mean, it was like, I don't even know why I picked that guitar.
But, that's not that bad. When you know, when you said pointy, I immediately went to like Dean or something. Oh, just really crazy. So
not to that extreme level. But it was weird though. I remember the very first time I ever even thought about guitar. I guess I should mention that. It's kind of interesting, because it was like my sophomore year, or no, it was my freshman year. I remember calling a guitar store to see if they had a Kramer, because I was like, at that point I was super into Van Halen, and I was like, oh, these Kramers, you know. I was able to find the name of the guitar, and I remember calling around to see if I could buy one, and there was no store around that carried them. And that was like the very first thought, it would be cool to play guitar. And it took me, you know, a good four years later before I ended up getting that Yamaha. But never learned any Van Halen though.
So what color? What color was that first guitar? Curious now.
Oh, it was black.
Okay, yeah. Just black. Yeah, did it have a pick guard or anything? It was just straight black, solid black.
Oh, yeah. It was a straight black. It had like a three pickups in it, if I remember right. Nice. Humbucker and a couple single coils, kind of strat kind of thing. But yeah.
Nice.
Nice.
But that Floyd was a horrible thing because, I mean, I remember, I just remember getting it, and the first day, I remember I broke my first string, and it was just a nightmare to, like, you know, I took all the strings off, and I couldn't, I mean, it's just like, I've never even strung a guitar, and I have to deal with this monster of, you know, fighting these springs and getting the balance right. I was like, oh, it's horrible.
It's good. It's a good thing you didn't quit after that.
Yeah.
That could have done it. I mean, you could have just like gave it up at that point, and there would be no rattlesnake cables. Yeah. That's awesome. Well, let's get back onto the cables, because I'm curious. You briefly mentioned a little bit about kind of your chase for tone a little bit in good sounding cables and the elements of what makes a good sounding cable. So maybe for us, those of us that just go and buy a $10 cable, you know, we obviously have a lot of your cables in the shop and we love them. They sound great. But maybe for those who haven't spent, you know, more than $10 on a cable, what are some things that a more high-end cable offers you in terms of tone and just, you know, maybe some of the elements you put in, the build quality that result in a good cable?
Gotcha. I mean, I guess, you know, on my first thoughts about building a cable, I kind of had a checklist of like what I wanted to achieve, and like signal quality obviously was a big thing that I started learning about with cable capacitance, that I can circle back to that, and durability and shielding were the three big things that I wanted to make sure that the cable that I put out kind of like marks those down and takes care of those. So the cable capacitance is probably your number one thing as far as tone that people notice from going from a $10 cable to a higher end cable. And it's basically it's your high end frequencies kind of get peeled off. Definitely more noticeable on longer runs. And it's kind of just the physics between the center conductor in relation to the shield. It'll start peeling off those frequencies to ground. So a thicker cable will get you a little better capacitance, and lower capacitance is kind of what you want, but there's a sweet spot. There's definitely too low capacitance where things can get really bright and kind of brittly glassy, that some guys don't want to have. And if your capacitance is too high, then you kind of get a muddy, darker signal. So I kind of wanted something in just kind of that sweet spot where I felt like at 15 and 20 feet that the signal would be nice and punchy, high ends there, but not, you know, glassy and just making your ears, you know, bleed from the high end. Just so I could get the best signal I can to my pedals and to my amp. It was like, I just wanted to get the, you know, where the rubber meets the road is that point where, you know, if all that's good, then everything else is just going to, you know, be better for you if you get these things out of the way. You got a good guitar, you got a good amp, you get a good cable, and then it's like, you know, from this point on, it's just kind of working and building your tone, instead of adjusting your amp to work on the mud that's coming out of your $10 cable.
Sure. That makes sense. Yeah, I know, like, one of the things that we like about your cables is the shielding that you put on them, kind of the mesh sort of thing. It looks like a rattlesnake. I'm sure that was maybe some intention there. It kind of looks like snake skin, but one of the things that we like about it is the fact that it doesn't coil up. It doesn't bind. It's really, you know, the worst thing is running a 20-foot cable and then having it turn into a pretzel shape, you know, at the end of your gig, or wrap around your foot. And so that's one of the things just personally I like about your cables and the way that works out. And I assume that was part of the design, but maybe kind of tell us why you decided to go with that.
Well, I mean, when we talk about shielding, there's two different. So the big shielding that I really was worried about was the actual braided shield on the inside, which is what just prevents from, you know, just outside interference and just noise when you like shake a cable. And then the weaving on the outside is exactly what you're talking about, is, you know, it's an abrasion resistant weaving on there. So it's just like, it just protects that cable even further. And you're right. It was one of my best friends held that cable. That was the first thing he says, like, oh, it feels like I'm holding a snake. But, you know, I just definitely wanted to have, the goals were to like, okay, how do I protect the cable? So, a common cable failure that happens if it doesn't happen on the plugs is what happens is the shielding on the inside will start to get broken from being kinked or stepped on or twisted too much. And this outer weaving definitely helps prevent that. So again, it's just, you know, it's to protect that inner shield.
Gotcha. Okay, nice. Cool. That's definitely, again, like that's one of our favorite things, you know, beside the sound of the cables is that, you know, we're running stuff back and forth and we've got the silent plugs on a lot of the rattlesnake cables that we have in the shop.
Oh, yeah.
Just because people are trying different guitars and plugging in different amps and that's just invaluable. So you're getting that loud pop, you know, when those plug in and all that. I think it's just, you know, that practical end of it, I think I appreciate a lot about what you do because there's not many people that consider that. And like every guitarist has fought the cable on stage or
yep.
wrapping it up to put it in their gear bag or whatever. So, I mean, that's just, to me, I just love that part of it. I think it's fantastic that you did it that way.
I mean, when I deal with, I've dealt with a few builders, pedals, guitars, or anything that, you know, I've like hooked them up with like test cables. And this goes back to when I was working on my pedals, because I mean, when I was testing a circuit and something's not working, I'm unplugging and plugging that thing in like 100 times.
Yeah.
And you know, it's like, I don't want to turn off the amp. It's just constant buzzing, popping, you know, as I'm like unplugging it and then tweaking on the pedal and then plugging it back in. And so I've definitely talked to a few builders, like, hey, I can make you a silent plug just for your testing, you know? And it's just like, you know, it's like a moment of like relief for them.
Yeah. You know, like... Yeah. Well, and we have this thing we call the ghetto tester here in the shop. It's basically like I don't even know what the term is, but it's two quick connects hardwired to a jack. And when we're testing just the quick audio of a pickup, we'll put that in there. And it's nice to have the silent plug because we just plug it in and we literally just hardwire the pickup, you know, quick connect it to this end and we'll hang it over a guitar string to make sure that it's making the correct sound, that it's in phase and all that stuff. And so we even use, you know, the rattlesnake cables for the $15 ghetto tester because they're so convenient in that sense. I do want to mention a little bit, you're also behind a few other things in the gear industry that maybe people don't know. And this is, I think effectsbay.com is actually where we cross paths. Maybe it was on Twitter, Twitter or something. It's been quite a while, actually, when we first kind of crossed paths. And I think we did an interview with you guys, and we've actually been, you know, maybe even pre-cables, we knew each other just through networking.
Totally. And
so tell us a little bit about Effects Bay and kind of what you do for that and what it's all about.
Man, Effects Bay really started a lot of things for me as far as like gear. So originally Effects Bay honestly was just a guitar pedal blog that I put together that originally just was a place that I could put down pedals that A, that I wanted to get, and B, that I could talk about the ones that I already had. And it was really just kind of just, I mean, I don't even really know why I started it. It was just kind of just out there. And then immediately I started noticing that people started following it, which then was like pretty awesome. And then a community basically came from that. And from there, you know, I really focus on, you know, musician gear, kind of like rig rundown stuff. I'll kind of like talk about players and what they're using on their boards. And, you know, if I get lucky and there's a pro musician in town here, or if I go to a show and I can actually get access, I'll do interviews and talk to those guys. And then around the time that we met was when I started changing a little bit as far as like working with builders, because it was awesome to meet builders that were, you know, just struggling out there to just, you know, get their product seen with, you know, just the massive amount of gear out there. And there were so many cool things that it's just hard to, you know, kind of get out of the pack. So I was really trying to reach out to like guys in garages and basements and whatnot and saying like, hey, do you want to do an interview and do build your profile or something like that? And do giveaways with their product or something like that to just really get some kind of eyeballs on them to get going. And which is also at the same time, in my opinion, like guitarists love the stuff that no one else knows about. You know what I mean? It's like, they love it when it's like, you know, when you walk up to someone's board and say, what's that? And like, oh, this is, you know, Joe Schmo Fuzz Face 2.0. And like, I've never even heard of that. I'm like, what's the deal? And it's like, there's a gravity to that. And that's where Effects Bay started changing my interest to being a builder. Because after talking to all these builders, starting to realize that there's a little bit of common interest and common ground. Like, hey, if this person could do it, maybe I could do it. Especially since I had interest in electronics a little bit, like no knowledge, just interest. And then got into like the gear building forums, like pedal building circuit forums, and how cool everyone was. I was super impressed with that. So yeah, I mean, Effects Bay to me is a huge part of like how Rattlesnake came from that. Because if it wasn't for Effects Bay, I would just be a consumer, I guess, and just look at it strictly from that point and actually understand from a builder's angle and seeing interest in that is what definitely made me want to do Rattlesnake.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's really cool. Just kind of how to hear how that kind of grew out of just starting there.
Yeah.
So I noticed we've talked several times about now here, and you've kind of got an interest in pedals and that kind of stuff. And I've noticed that you actually do have a buffer on your site that you're selling. Maybe can you explain a little bit just for people about kind of what the buffer does and why it should be kind of, or how it should be used, where it should be used, and why?
Yeah. So the buffer definitely is scratching the itch of me still wanting to do pedals. And the buffer came around the same time, knowledge of buffers came around the same time when I was actually doing a lot of research on cables a few years ago. And around that time, I mean, every pedal that was a feature, true bypass pedals. And a friend of mine who I played guitar with for many years, he got a signal line buffer on his board, and I was like, what's the deal with this thing? And he was kind of showing me, like turning it on and off, and the tone difference was insane in his particular setup, because he was running 220-foot cables, one guitar to board, and then one board to amp, quality cables, and he has a gazillion pedals.
Yeah.
And was just talking about like a cable capacitance again. And so the idea is the buffer basically preserves those frequencies that get peeled off as it's getting lost in the long run. Now, typically, a buffer needs to be your first pedal or your first active circuit in the line. So if you have like passive pickups and you got a long cable, the buffer traditionally should be next. That definitely changes depending on what kind of setup you have. When you talk about people with buffers, they'll be like, oh, never put a buffer in front of a fuzz because it'll sound bad. That's definitely, you know, it sounds different. I don't want to say it sounds bad, because I definitely know people that actually love buffers in front of their fuzzes because they love the nasty sound that they get from it. So it doesn't necessarily mean it's wrong or right. It's taste, and it's like what your ear is telling you. If people should have buffers or not, I get asked that, you know, like they'll come to the site or I'll talk to them on chat or whatever. And I'm like, hey, so you got Rattlesnake buffers. Should I get one to fix my, you know, help with my tone or whatever? And I think I'm the worst salesman ever when it comes to that, because I always say if you need a buffer, you know you need a buffer, then that's the time to get a buffer. Don't get a buffer because you feel like you should have a buffer, you know, just for the sake of having it. If you have a buffer already on your board, that's not going to help you get a second buffer. There's pedals that do have buffers in them already, and depending on what those pedals are, that could be a good buffer or a bad buffer. Like a wah, like Crybaby has a buffer. That's a bad buffer. Tube Screamers, not the best buffer in the world. That's why you get the tone suck. They actually do the opposite of what you want. But you know, there's plenty of pedals that might already have a buffer in it. Like, you know, for example, like delay pedals that when you turn it off and you have the delay trails at the end of it, that's a buffer inside of that. That's how you're getting the delay trails after you turn off the pedal. So it all depends. I always say it's a fix-up tool if you need it. And I wanted to provide, like, you know, again, like if someone bought a Rattlesnake and it's low capacitance cable, you shouldn't need a buffer. But depending on the situation, you might. And that's why I wanted to have a tool in case you needed it to do it. And our buffer is a little different in the sense that we have an on-off switch on it, which you don't see buffers with that. And it always really killed me because the only way you could tell if it was good or bad is you had to unplug it from your line and then plug it back in. And then, but your memory is going to be lost. Like, how did it sound just 2 minutes ago? I don't remember. Does it sound better because I plugged something else in? It might be a psychological effect. I love the fact that our buffer has the toggle on it because you can plug it in wherever you want in your pedal board. And then you can turn it on and off as you're playing and say like, oh, I hear a difference, or I don't like it in front of the fuzz here. I like it at the end of my line, and you can make those adjustments. That's kind of the reason why I went with that toggle. I'm not sure if anybody does that really. I can't think of any, but yeah. And then the whole circuit idea too was like, you know, it was again just scratching that itch. You know, I had a friend of mine from Loud Button in Minneapolis. I had a schematic, and I had an etched PCB that I did myself. It was big. And so I had, you know, the acid washed out the traces and the whole bit. And I wanted to get that into the enclosure that you see, that little mini enclosure. So I sent him my prototype and sent him my schematic. And then he was able to do it in a Eagle, which is a, like kind of a drafting CAD software.
Oh, nice.
to lay out the circuit board. And then I wanted like made in USA circuit board. And we had that manufactured in Minnesota, and, you know, same thing, you know, get all the components here and try to get the best components. And, you know, the enclosures are etched here in Missoula and all that stuff. So,
yeah, but yeah,
it's
awesome.
A lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to do that. I would love to do, you know, another pedal, like an overdrive or something like that, maybe down the road, but want to stay awesome. Focused on cables. So,
there you go. Awesome. Well, you've been doing this for a little while now. One thing that we kind of been asking quite a few people as they come through is, what have you maybe learned about this gear industry as you've started up? It's always interesting to hear different owners talk about kind of their experiences, or even, you know, if someone else is looking to get into this kind of industry, do you have any advice for people going forward?
Yeah, I guess I have a few observations on that. You know, I have a lot of friends that are business owners, you know, from restaurants to, you know, everything. I have friends that are in the gear community as well, but definitely my closest friends that own businesses don't have anything to do with gear. And I've owned, you know, different businesses in my life. My parents owned a business. I have never seen a community or industry like the music gear industry as far as how everyone appears to get along. There definitely is like a camaraderie there in some ways. I also think that the beauty of like entrepreneurial spirit, as far as like the idea of I'm just going to start a business in my basement, is a real possibility, and it's encouraged and it's fun. And I think that's kind of exciting. And it's also, there are a lot of role models in the business too. I mean, just like, you know, you guys, I just always look at other businesses that have started up and then keep going and increasing, going to the next level. And I'm just like, you know, I just like, I can't wait till I can get to this point. And there's so many people. I've reached out to so many different businesses to say, hey, mind if I just give you a call and let's just talk about business. I don't want to know about the secret sauce. I don't want to know about any of that. I mean, really, like, how do you get a dealer, or how do you increase sales? Like, what do you do? And it's like, I'll end up on the phone for like 2.5 hours with some of these people, and they're just like, just really are extremely helpful, where I can't really see that in other businesses that I've been associated with in my life, that I think is kind of cool. As far as like people to go on their own, you know, I think I would sit there and say to really see if it's passion or if it's a fad. So if it's something that they look at it and say, like, this would be really fun to do and have a dream, like, yeah, I'm just gonna, you know, make a pedal and like make $1 million and be really fun. It's like you have to really understand that it's an insane amount of work. It's an insane amount of commitment and money. And, you know, you might never get there. You might never get to the turnaround. So it's like you have to make sure that it's something worth starting and be mentally prepared for that. Have you ever read the book, The Dip?
I haven't. No, I haven't read that one.
It's this guy, Seth Godin, is like a marketer, but the book is something called The Dip. It's like learning when to quit. And the idea is like, as you're striving for something really big, people, the trajectory goes up because they're excited. It's super fun, like scuba diving. I want to go scuba diving. You know, it's like got all these friends and you buy gear and you go out to Hawaii and you do all this stuff. That's your up. Then you go down because, you know, you don't have time to do it all the time. And it's too costly to do it. And that's the dip. And the idea is you should never quit in the dip because you've wasted all the money. And when you're at the top, that you should have quit before you even got to that point. If you'd known you couldn't continue on. So if you make it through the dip, that's when you have an exponential curve of like, oh, now you're a scuba instructor and you go scuba diving every day in Florida or whatever. And now you're up to the top. I think the dip is like something with music gear a lot. It's like that whole idea is like, okay, you're going to build pedals. You go buy the enclosures. You get all excited. You make 50 prototypes. You sell them on eBay and you go there and you don't sell any. And then you go, oh, I guess it's not for me. And you're just like, well, you wasted 50 enclosures and, you know, 100 hours of development time, and now you quit. It's just like, you know, you got to know you got to have the passion to see it through before you start, I think.
That's good. Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that because I remember when we first got a few pickups done and I had got past a few of my friends and they're like, yeah, these are good. And there was like, I had it in my head that I needed to get into as many music stores as I could. And so we went on this Northwest tour of all these music stores and a bunch of guys blew me off and other guys, you know, gave them a listen, but were, you know, too busy. And we went to so many music stores thinking like, man, this would be it. This is how we're going to turn Porter pickups into a, you know, a real job, if you will. And it was the biggest flop that I've ever done ever in business. And I wanted to quit at that point. You know, I was in that point,
yeah.
You know, I'm like, oh, this is not working. I don't know why I just spent all this money to travel and set up all these appointments and do all that. But then it was like, you know, part of that also, you know, those experiences, I guess, when you're in that part, you can either learn from them or you can be destroyed by them. And,
yes,
you know, thankfully I wasn't destroyed by that, even though it was close, you know, I was like,
yeah,
I thought this was how it was supposed to go. Isn't this the way that it works? And, you know, you kind of, if you're stubborn, like me, you learn the hard way and you keep going and you adapt and you change. And, you know, honestly, I think that's probably where, you know, you mentioned some of the things that had to be in place before you even made any cables. Mm-hmm. You know, part of that is the passion. Part of that is just the fact that you're, you know, you stuck with it. You were stubborn enough to make them and to do the research. And I think, you know, knowing what we know about your cables, haven't played the buffer, but, you know, seeing that has paid off, you know, for you just in terms of a good product that fits in the gear industry. So I think, you know, in that sense, I think you're doing something right.
Oh, thanks.
No problem. Well, it's good to have you on today. We're just wanted to make sure that we give you a chance to shout out your social media stuff, maybe your website link, and what we'll do on our podcast extra page on our site. We'll include links so when people go and listen to the podcast, they can just click straight over to your site. So why don't you tell us just kind of how people can find you on social media?
Sweet. Yeah, definitely our website, which is www.rattlesnakecables.com. You get to see a lot of examples and stuff that we're doing on our social, which is we're on Facebook. So facebook.com/rattlesnakecables or instagram.com/rattlesnakecables.
Very cool. Nice. Well, Hank, thanks for coming on today. We appreciate having you. And, you know, maybe down the road when we get some more pedals going or something, we'll have you on again.
Yeah.
We would like to do some, you know, some Effects Bay related stuff. Maybe we can do another podcast in the future, more focused on, you know, just kind of your journey through meeting all these artists and talking with industry people. Because I think, you know, if anything, I think you've got a really good insight on the gear industry. So again, thanks for coming on and appreciate having you.
Awesome. Thanks.
Well, thanks for listening, and we're excited for our next episode of the podcast. We're going to be doing a little bit of a behind the scenes sort of thing with our podcast, as well as our video and audio demos. We're going to talk a little bit about the equipment that we use, just some of the things that we've found that are really helpful in recording guitar and all sorts of stuff like that. We're also going to be having a conversation with Jack Fawcett, who is a YouTube demoer out there. We've loved having him demo a ton of our pickups, and he's just a phenomenal guitar player. And we're going to talk about what he uses for his video setups and his thoughts on kind of what makes a good YouTube demo. So tune in next time. And until then, thanks for listening. Bye.